His mama always told him, son, you got a face made for sitting behind a microphone.
Sometimes it helps to laugh at tragedy.
Here he is, the creator of In the Trenches, your host, Kevin Devon.
Welcome to another edition of In the Trenches, the podcast for systems administrators and IT professionals. I'm your host, Kevin Devon, and welcome to a Thursday evening. Today is Thursday, November 18th. You'll probably be getting this on Friday. You'll notice in my last podcast, I did some working or tinkering around trying to do it a little bit different, and I have to apologize because my bumper music, the intro and outro, they both stunk, and I think it's a problem. I don't think I have things set up quite the way I don't have things set up quite the way I want. I think I need to make a run to Radio Shack and get a few more cables. And I need to educate myself a little bit more on this balanced and unbalanced bit. So hopefully I can get that accomplished this weekend and make these podcasts sound a little bit better and be able to do all the mixing, real time, and hopefully not degrade the sound quality of them. Because that's one of the things I'm really concerned about, is the whole reason why I bought the mixer is, one, to make it easier to do these podcasts, and two, to hopefully make it a little bit richer in sound quality. So I don't feel like I'm making a headway there too much. So we'll see. Just keep tinkering. Had some feedback on our last couple of episodes or shows. I've gotten plenty of feedback on the tech chats. Everybody seems to really enjoy those, feel like they can really relate to them, that's the same kind of thing that they're doing in their environment, which that's exactly what it was meant for. A handful of sysadmins sitting around chit-chatting about things that are common in their environments and how they deal with things. So I'm definitely going to keep those going. I really enjoy that. And I got a lot of good feedback so far as the interview with the staffing experts, the one from Microsoft and one working with Google. So those two provided a good filler, because earlier this week, you could probably tell in my last podcast, my voice was on its way out. And so I was off work for a couple of days this week, homesick, and I'm still suffering from it. I'm still sounding a little bit nasally, but it is getting better. I'm feeling much better. Hopefully I can shake this thing. Coming up here this next week, of course, we have Thanksgiving, and last thing I want to be is sick on Thanksgiving. Nothing worse. Listener feedback. I had a response from Wayne Arthurton. And his was basically in response to feedback I had provided to Armando Cerna regarding the use of headphones. And I had advised him to try out using a splitter for both the headphones and microphones so that he and his dad could create podcasts while they have their little conversations during their commute. And what Wayne had said is that he's experimented with the multi microphone using splitters in the past with a lack of success. Seems that the only way to get really good recording of two input sources is to use a mixer. He doesn't know if there's any good applications for mixing sound for multiple sources in Windows, but then again, he hadn't really tried. I don't think there is either. I know there's Audacity to mix tracks, but again, that doesn't mix inputs. And as I understand it, Microsoft or Windows only likes you to use one input at a time for whatever reason. So the only real way around that, I think, is maybe If the splitter option does not work, would then, of course, to use a mixer. So not a very favorable response there. And thanks, Wayne, for setting me straight. That's something, though, I do want to test. You know, like I said, I'm probably going to make a Radio Shack run here soon, probably this weekend. And I'm going to try to pick up a couple of those splitters. They don't cost that much. And tinker with them myself and see what I come up with on a PC. Now, one thing I did notice after I thought about it is, if I'm not mistaken, Armando had mentioned something about GarageBand. And that led me to believe that perhaps he was using a Mac. And if he's using a Mac, you know, a laptop, a PowerBook, iBook, whatever, that may be a different story altogether. You know, and I'm not familiar enough with the Mac line to suggest a peripheral like that or a splitter or something along those lines. So I'd be, you know, a fish out of water there. So I hope that's not the case. I can, you know, hopefully speak a little bit towards the PC, but I'm not sure on the other. So I'll find out, and I'll keep you updated with what I find. Let's see. One of the things I wanted to comment on was I had made a visit to Alex Scoble's website or his blog earlier this week, and he had an entry about why Microsoft allows a user running with local administrative rights to disjoin or remove the machine from a domain, but yet that same user cannot add that machine to the domain. In other words, it requires a domain administrator's right credentials to add the machine to the domain, but a local administrator can remove it. You know, and I'm not exactly sure the reasoning behind, you know, why that is. You know, it would be nice. I can see, you know, part the reason it came up was he had had an entry or he had posted that one of his users who, you know, he works for a law firm and his users are attorneys. And one of the attorneys had gone out of country and at a client site and apparently needed to utilize some resources there within that client's domain. And due to what I would call a piss poor administrator in that client's, you know, network there, they had instructed Alex's user, the attorney, to remove himself from his company's domain and to join theirs so that he could utilize their resources. Well, obviously, this administrator didn't know his stuff and fatally, I guess you could say, the user was then unable to get to his Outlook and his offline folders. So it had, you know, very, very bad consequences because of having these rights to be able to do that. You know, and one of my comments was, to me, the objective would be to get the users out of, get them away from using the administrative, you know, the local administrative rights. And then that would have prevented it. But, you know, he made a good point in that there are software packages out there that do not operate correctly while running anything less than administrative rights. And sad to say, you know, my company actually produces one of those pieces of software, you know, and I don't take credit for it. I just support these guys. Okay. So before anybody starts hammering on me, you know, I don't write it. I just support it. So anyway, and I had suggested that one way around it would be to get them out of the administrative rights issue and have them run, say, as a power user or whatever. But one thing you could do is create a local account that's identical to the domain account and then have that local account utilized the same profile. And I did a blog entry, a while back on my blog on how to do this. And then logged in the local context or on the domain, you have the same setup, access to the same applications, of course, unless they're on a server. And the only time I can see this is potentially being an issue would be in the event that you're using roaming profiles. Then it might become a little stickier of an issue. But nonetheless, it does give you the ability to log in a local context, still have your same familiar environment, access to all of your applications, and then you could connect to a foreign domain, if you have an account on it, and, do what you need to do. Now, it would seem logical to me that even without that, you should still, as long as you're not using the same name, another the same user ID, if he was using cached credentials, there still seems like he should have been able to get onto that foreign network by just passing the proper credentials, So maybe I'm missing something here or what, but nonetheless, that administrator gave him some horribly poor advice. That is not an administrator. I can't help but think that has to be some office worker who has been tasked with maintaining their network just because they knew how to spell PC. So that's the only thing I can think of there. So anyway, but Alex he's got a good blog. He shares a lot of little insights of what he does in his environment. And again, like I've said, many times, it's interesting to see what others do in their environments. There's many issues that are very similar, but everybody's environment's a little different. He's working in a law environment, a law firm. And so his users have special needs, and he shares quite a bit of stuff. So I encourage you to check it out. Another interesting tidbit there. I was also reading on another one today, as a matter of fact, Tim Anderson's web blog, and I'll place a link to his blog as well on the site. And he mentioned a discussion with that had come up with a Bob Davis, who's the general manager of global technology services at Microsoft, and he manages all of the global infrastructure of apparently of Microsoft. And during an interview at the IT Forum in Copenhagen, he made a statement that they have, somewhere around 60,000 employees and 300,000 devices, and that nearly every one of those employees operate in with local administrative rights. Now, wow, you think about it. Yeah, that's a lot of users with a lot of potential to really mess themselves up, But his reasoning for it that by granting them local administrative rights, they as a company are then, it allows them to be agile. And I can agree with that. That's been part of my philosophy myself, with my experience with dealing with developers. I work in a development environment. It's an R&D. We do hardware and software, and our users do have local administrative privileges to their machine because they are constantly installing and uninstalling applications. Now, the key feature here, specifically with my users, and I think it goes equally well with, say, Alex's users, is that they have to be educated on the proper use and the consequences of having local administrative rights. They have the ability to do what they need to do to get their job done, uninstall, reinstall, whatever. But with that comes some responsibility. And I know it's going to be tough because, especially in Alex's case, the types of users he's supporting, they don't want to know the insides of a computer. They don't want to know the details of the operating system. They want to know how to get task A, B, and C done and as quickly and as efficiently as possible because they bill by the hour. The faster they can get those tasks done, that means the more that they can bill. So they're not going to want to know all the little details of, you know, how to run or why this, why that. But it is imperative that they do know those kinds of things if they're going to run in that context. And if they're not, you know, the other part of our job as systems administrators is we have to sometimes protect, we have to protect these users sometimes from themselves. There's been many times where they'll chop off the limb that they're sitting on and not even realize it. You know, and just because they have some sense of knowledge of what they've got and what they're doing, and sometimes they don't have enough or they just kind of go off half-cocked. And, you know, when that happens, there's consequences, you know, and it may be downtime, it may be, you know, loss of productivity, whatever. But, you know, it just comes with the territory. If you're going to operate in that kind of an environment, you know, there's going to be bad things happen at some point in time. So anyway, like I said, I do it. I'm sure others do it. Is it the best way? Probably not. I'm very certain it's not. But it's a mitigated risk, in my opinion. We take chances, but we feel they're worth the risk considering what we're trying to get done. Do I think it's for everybody? Definitely not. Our administrative users, they do run in a lockdown mode. Hey, they only need to do tasks 1, 2, and 3, A, B, and C. That's all they're there to do. That's all they need to do. That's all they're going to get to do. You know, and there's not a problem with that. So it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all type scenario. So, but I'm interested to hear what others have. You know, how are you guys running yours? You know, your systems at, you know, where you work. Do your users, all your users, some of your users, are they any users running in with local administrative rights? I'd be curious to know. You know, send me a line, kevin.devon@gmail.com, and you know, I'd be interested to know that. And if you have the ability, send me an audio email, audio feedback. All right, so with that, I think I'm going to wrap this up. We're pushing up or coming close on 20 minutes, and I want to wrap this up before that. I like to keep these between 10 to 20 minutes at most. The tech chat's obviously going to be longer. So with that, if I don't talk to you before next week, I'll probably get one of these out here. Well, I'll try to do one before, you know, Monday or Tuesday. And then we probably won't see one till next weekend. So if I don't talk to you before then, everybody in America and the United States, have a happy turkey day. And for everybody else, have a good weekend, and I will talk to you later. All right, see ya.
You've been listening to In the Trenches, and now it's your turn. We'd love to hear from you. You can email Kevin at kevin.devon@gmail.com. Your suggestions and thoughts, both good and bad, about this podcast are always welcome. And we'd love to hear your show ideas as well. Audio email is always best. You never know. We might use it in a future podcast. Again, you can email Kevin at kevin.devon@gmail.com.